This is the 7th anniversary of the finest piece of utter filth on the internet of podcasts, SML. Normally, we'd discuss the benefits of longevity and how we've outlasted so many other podcasts and productions. Like, we beat Firefly without batting an eyelash. House of Cards, stuffed like a turkey. And we're coming for you, MASH. But no, that's not what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about something more relevant to our little corner of the podcast world. The 7-year itch. Actually, it's not all that relevant, really at all. But it sounds funny to say. Statistics show that the 7-year itch is a real thing. It's a psychological condition in our human brains that make us want to go wander after 7 years of committed relationships. And heaven only knows that we should be committed. The 7-year itch could be a desire to find some other podcast. It could be dissatisfaction with all of the bits getting dropped. It could also just be herpes. We just want you to know that if you do decide to go wander, we understand the psychology behind it. There's the door. It'll always be open for you whence you return. Because you know there's nothing like us out there. And you also know that we'll find you and kill you if you leave. We stole the giant stamp from the set of The Naked Gun that literally says, "Find him and kill him." So go, or don't. The choice is yours. Or just stick around and listen to our unique brand of tomfuckery. Love and kisses. Here's to 7 more.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I'm not dead.
You're not so dead.
I think that's, you know, best I can get today. It's raining.
Even better?
Yeah.
Our show is turning 7.
It's in kindergarten now. First grade. It's in first grade now.
Yay. It's going to learn to spell soon.
It's going to get, they start teaching kids to spell in preschool now.
Man, that's too advanced for me.
So, like, it's going to be sitting in the corner with a dunce cap, but it's cool.
Probably.
It's just doing the best it can do. Did you die? What happened?
I died. I don't know. Something fell. Something fell somewhere. Because we're not alone. It is a Tuesday night as we are recording, which means party cast time. Which means that Chris and Purnell are both here. How are you guys doing?
Party!
Party, woo!
I'm dead, but on the positive, at least the show is old enough to drink now.
Wait, what?
That's right. This show is a rebel, Dottie.
Drinking at 7.
That's right. Like a mean podcast would. Got a problem? Take the fish.
Podcast been hanging out with too many of the older podcasts.
That's right.
No.
Our podcast is going to start smoking cigarettes soon.
Rolled in with the wrong crowd, told mom to get bent. You know how it goes. These
dealing cars.
Going, haul ass to Lollapalooza. That's how old I am. Actually, I'm not that old, but I always like that scene for some dumb reason.
Lollapalooza.
I don't even know much about Lollapalooza. I just know that some old guy hauled ass there, and he liked it in a stolen car.
Where did you get this story?
Lollapalooza.
Like, do they?
They do.
Yeah.
You
July 30th
do,
to August
do.
2nd is Lollapalooza this year.
I'll be damned.
In Chicago.
Yeah, we got a haul ass there with our stolen car and our podcast at 7.
Yeah, our 7-year-old vigilante podcast is going to Lollapalooza.
Oh, my God. So many guests will be there. That stoned guy and the dude who keeps pissing himself. So many choices, all ready to talk about shit. I can't wait.
I have
man. So who here thought this show would be going for 7 years?
Honestly,
really? You thought we would?
Yeah.
Why? What is wrong with you?
why stop?
Fair point.
I always see the one of things where it's like pretty much like how when I first got involved in it, I remember it was like somebody was out or something. Like, you want to review this game while he's out? And I was like, all right, sure, give me. And I reviewed it and came on and chatted for a bit. And he's like, you want to review another one? And I was like, all right. So I did. Came on, chatted, and I kept doing it.
Joe's like your dealer with the codes. He's like, do you want to try reviewing a game? And you're like,
about it, though.
Yeah, I got some time. I'll do one. And then before you know it, you're like snorting 9 indies every week and
chopping them up with my credit card.
Yeah. But
that's the thing about it, though, that I think is most important to point out. And I think you guys are probably on the same boat, which is that it's not even really that there's a need like for games. Like, it's not like if you didn't have reviews, you'd be like, shit, I'm so bored. I got nothing to fucking do. But it's nice to be able to say, hey, here's this game. I can dabble in it and then hang out with my friends online for an hour or two and talk about it. It's just a nice, it's a routine. It's a nice routine, you know? And I honestly think that's why I end up sticking with it, because as anybody who knows me knows, I got a backlog for days. I'm staring right at a good chunk of it right the hell now.
Just days? I think mine's up to years now.
Oh my God. Oh, yeah. I don't want to talk about it.
I try not to be a jerk about them, you know? I want them to feel roomy, that they have a chance. But yeah, I have a pretty massive... They have no shot in hell. This is a library now. It's the Library of Video Congress. but like, I have all these games here. I mean, it's not like I'm hurting for something to play. But regardless of that, it's more about, hey, here's this cool new thing. I'll dabble in it. And in some cases, it'll even be, here's this thing that looks like absolute jank. I'll play it. And it's like, wait a minute, this isn't jank at all. And if it weren't for the fact that I tried it, I would never know. So now I got to tell other people, they need to get on this shit. Like, to me, that's probably the second coolest aspect of the show doing what it does. It's that it gives games a chance to shine that otherwise get lost in the shuffle. And it comes out when I do, like, when I do two things. One, when we do our year in games here, when we chat about it here sometime. And also, every year for Rhythm and Pixels, we'll do, like, our favorite games of the year in terms of song. Like, pick some tracks from your favorite games. And whenever we talk about other people, they're always like naming the big shot releases that came over. It's like, hey, my favorite game, whatever Halo came out or whatever Assassin's Creed came out, whatever bullshit new big title came out that's on all the other game award shows. And they're like, Pernod, what's your favorite game release this year? Baba's You or Death in Request. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, they were my favorite game. And it also helps to carry the mantra of favorite games aren't necessarily subjective to what is on the shelf, like everything that's available on the shelf. Your favorite game is what you played, and what was your favorite amongst the stuff you played. So, like, have you ever played a game or talked to people and it's like, what's your favorite game or something? You name it, and they'll go, what about this other game with this much bigger title? And you go, I haven't played that at time. And they try to give you crap about it, like, well, you don't know what the book you're talking about. Get back to me where you play Resident Evil 2. And I'm like, shut up. It's not. I don't have to play shit. I don't have to ever play. For me, this is the top dog. You're welcome to come hang out in my world and play the games I play. Otherwise, shut up. You know, but it's like, it helps you to acknowledge what other titles are out there. You can share those with other people, and you can give those games the credit they're due in a world where they get knocked down because they're not pushing AAA budgets. This is a nice feeling. And that was a lot of words.
It was. There, when I was using transport to get back and forth to doctor's appointments, one of the guys that would pick me up and take me to my appointments was really big into games as well. And anytime he'd be like, oh, what are you playing now that you love? And I'd be like, you know, talking about playing, of course, all the indies. I've been very big on Slay the Spire and Card Apocalypse and stuff lately. Where the water tastes like wine. And I would talk about games like those, and he'd be like, oh, well, I have like 400 hours in Kingdom Hearts. And I'm like, Lord, you have no idea the whole world you have missed in games just because it's not a AAA title. So you didn't bother to pick it up. Mm-hmm. Some of my favorite games ever, The Flame and the Flood, Silence, Nobody knows shit about them that don't fuck around with indies already.
No.
Like my game of the one of my games of the decade was freaking Dungeon of the Endless, and people are like, what the hell is that? I'm like, that's right, of the decade. One of the best four. And people were shocked to hear that. I'm like, well, here's why. And here's how you missed it. And to be quite blunt, if a AAA publisher decided to finally realize, you know, this game is really good, let's try to mimic that. I'd buy their version too, because this is a style of game that deserves all the respect it can get. No one freaking knows about it. It's crazy.
I always find it to be such a weird paradigm. That same guy, he was like, oh, what's your gamer score? Mine's 30,000. And he was like so proud of the 30,000 gamer score. And I'm just like,
were you back there yawning? Like,
that's a fucking month of reviews for me. I'm popping out 300,000, and I'm just like, I have so much I need to go finish.
My gamer score is 2.
Oh no!
No, you should have a couple of gamer score. You were playing Monster Viator.
Oh yeah, true. And I got like hells of accomplishments in that so far.
Yeah, those little achievements, right? Yeah, Windows 10. We'll be getting to that later on in the show.
Yeah,
Windows 10 games. There you go. Easy peasy gamer scores.
Yeah, so you can get gamer score pretty, now.
Still pretty sure my score is 2.
Dead face.
At this point in time, I think the lower score is probably the bigger achievement, considering how long the systems have been around and stuff, and how quickly you can get.
You have to actively try to not get gamer score.
Exactly. It's a minimalist game. It's a minimalist playthrough. Just like,
there's a challenge.
You beat this game with the least amount of items. Bam, there you go. Play the most number of games with the lowest gamer score.
Yeah.
Have a race to see who could beat a Rat-a-Lake game without getting 1,000.
Oh, there you go, see? And you can even like have like a second profile whose sole purpose is to be your nega profile, where it's like you have the one profile where you're like, I got a gajillion points. And the other one's like, I got 7. How'd you pull that off? Like, I played 12 games and I got no achievements in 5 of them. And then these few had achievements that were worth 1 point each. So I got those.
Jesus, like, Christ.
The skill. You can't even beat a stage in a game because they give you an achievement for beating the first level.
There's a game like, that can be completed in 54 seconds because you skip it. You just skip everything and it gives you all the achievements. Yes.
What
Rememory
game?
Can be completed in 54 seconds because you just hold down the skip button and skip every chapter.
That is beautiful. Also beautiful, the fact that Carnage just subbed to us.
Yay.
How crazy is that? Celebrating our 7th
no? Literally insane.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, like, I thought, so is it like a thing that you have to consistently do, or are you saying just like Carnage is listening for a while, but then Carnage is now subscribing?
It's subscribing on Twitch.
Okay, for some reason my brain
that costs money.
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah, thank you.
Carnage is supporting us financially for absolutely no reason.
Well, aside from being awesome and wanting to inflict carnage upon the world by way of this podcast.
See, there you go.
Yeah, pretty much. And then Lord of Night is raiding us with a party of 5. Might as well bring more people in here. It's a party tonight.
We're sorry.
Woo! We're a Fox TV show. Congratulations.
Party.
Correction, party. A dead Fox TV show, which makes us even better.
Chris, I just checked. You have 660 achievement points.
Ooh, so close.
You need to go find some
660, the number of the beast. Not quite as catchy.
Yeah, no. We gotta get you a 6-point achievement somehow.
I gotta find one.
Or a 5 and a 1.
Help with that.
It's probably a service that lets you like look up achievements by their value so you can like round your score and stuff.
TA does through achievements. There's a whole website. It can
I need an achievement that's worth 0.7. We got that shit.
Yeah. When I wanted to hit 300,000 on the nose, I just went to TA and like narrowed it down to find an achievement that would round me out because I was one off. I was ending on a 9 and I had to go find a 1 and a 5 to complete the 300,000 on the nose.
A 1 and a 5.
Yeah.
That sounds. Did you have to end up buying the game that had the 5 on it?
No, I didn't buy any of the games. I just narrowed it down, looked through the ones that I already owned.
Oh, I got you. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Carnage is saying he's 70,000 gamer score away from 1 million.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm like 1,500 or something away from 500,000, so I'm getting there.
Nice.
The funny part was that I think it was around the time I switched over to the One, honestly, but when I went from the 360 to the One, there was this moment that was almost like an epiphany where I just stopped caring about the total. I would focus on like achievements in game, mind you, like, hey, this is one I want to try to get, and it just has worth some points. All right, that's cool. But the numbers stopped clicking for me because I started to just kind of feel like it's almost like when you play those RPGs where you start doing like this guy again, where you do like 9 digits worth of damage, and it just, the number starts to lose all meaning at that point. So did I kill him yet? No. I guess I better do another giant number of damage until he's dead, because it just kind of goes off into the moon, and I just couldn't do it anymore. I was like, I don't even know what I'm gathering at this point. But I was like, you know, I still like getting the achievements. I like getting my game to show you completed this game, or you've gotten this many, or these specific really cool ones. So I do that, but I stopped chasing the total because it just got crazy. And I'm like, big. And it's funny because when I think about when I stopped and the numbers you guys are saying now, oh my God, it's like the world went all without me. I don't even know. I'm still using tungsten while you guys are using like diamondium. I don't even know. It's crazy.
I'm at 316,000. So that's pretty impressive considering I only hit 300,000 at the end of November.
Yeah, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, I'm booking it.
So Joe is you're at 316,000. Chris is at 660. What are you at, Joe?
I'm at God, let me pull it up quick. I'll just find out the exact number. 490 something. 498. Didn't change, I want to say.
Jeebus. And Carnage just said they're nearing a mil?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord.
Yep, birds.
Oh, there's people with more than that. There's people who have had like 2
million. Yeah, there's. Aren't there a couple people over 2 million already?
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesus. They have to be achievement chasing, like doing like grabbing games specifically for them. That's a lot of damn points.
That is a lot of points. People have. Like, someone was saying 7 years doing the show, how little of a life do we have? How little of a life do they have that they have over 2 million gamers? They're probably making bank, though, doing that.
There are some, you mean like, to buy the games required for it?
I'm sure that there's a lot of those guys that just get press copies for everything. It's like, hey, just stream our game, and here it is, go play it, have fun. I'm sure they get more games than we do.
That's a good point. And if their whole thing is streaming, then they're just going to sit there and play it on camera all day and then go to bed and wash, rinse, repeat.
Yeah. And I am at 498,640. So I am creeping up on 500,000.
I'll live vicariously through those massive numbers. I almost know what a gamer score is. If I just keep playing, I'll see it.
We got to get Chris some Rattle Lake games soon.
Well, I have them, but on Switch and PS4.
Yeah, and PS4. We got to get you getting Xbox achievements, though. How many trophies do you have?
I don't want to share my Rattleika games with
you. How many what?
How many trophies do you have?
PlayStation trophies? I don't know. Yeah. Is there a way to check that?
They have total numbers, but I'd never keep up with that either. I'm just like, I got trophies, and they're there.
I can tell you I platinumed exactly one game.
Skyrim?
Do you know which one?
Actually, not Skyrim.
Really?
Yeah, Reverie.
I'll be damned.
Yeah, Skyrim.
That makes sense. That game is easy and quick, actually. It's like, what, 5 dungeons?
Yeah, something like that.
It's a good game, though, but short.
Yeah, totally. But no, yeah, the Skyrim one, there's just a couple things I still need to do. I just haven't done everything yet, because I only stream on PS4, so I'm not, like, achievement hunting. I'm, like, working on my builds. And so, yeah.
We got to get you that platinum, though. That's what you got to work on next.
Okay, getting a platinum on Skyrim.
Yeah, that's your next goal on stream. Get that platinum. Find what you're missing and do that platinum.
Okay.
Oh, man, we should probably get to games, though. I know it's fun chatting about the history of the show and chatting about games and fun shit like that. But we have work to do. We have some actual games we have to discuss. Are you all ready to do some reviews?
Yeah.
I guess so.
Well, you better be ready, because the first game to talk about is called Arc of Alchemist, developed by Compile Heart, published by Diafactory International, released January 30th on PS4 and Switch for $39.99. Quinn Bravesford and her squad are sent on a quest to find the great power, the key to save humanity. Is there hope within the desert, or is it merely a mirage? Purnell, tell us about Arc of Alchemist.
Well, for those who know me, know that Idea Factory and I get along well with their games. Play a ton of them. And I, like I said, I think last year, one of my favorite games I dropped around this time, actually, was Death End Requests. And I had my reasons for liking it. I was hoping I'd have the same click with this game, but it didn't quite strike a chord. And I'm going to talk about it and hopefully convey properly why that is. So, this game starts out with you controlling Quinn and her entire band of merry heroes as you are traversing a vast wasteland in search of, as you mentioned earlier, a great power. This great power is meant to hopefully do something, because at the offset of the story, none of the characters even know what it is going to do. They just know it's destined to rescue them from a world that is depleted of resources and on the brink of death. So you are traversing this wasteland, and the traversal is done by way of an action RPG structure. You control Quinn, unless you want to change her to one of the other characters, and two other characters, and they run across the map, and when enemies show up, you have two attack buttons. You have one attack that does one type of attack, and the other button does another type of attack. These are determined by the weapon that you have equipped, so if you have like the one, like the basic sword or something, like one sword, it'll do a bullet shot and a sword combo. You switch to an axe, it'll do a cross strike and like a pound strike. And then you can have another axe, just like another combo. But basically, each weapon type has a different number of attacks that exists within it. And then each weapon itself can only have up to two between those buttons. In addition, when you attack enemies enough, you'll charge a super meter. And when you press the button to trigger the attack, you'll do your super attack. If you press down, you do the main character, your character that you're controlling. If you push left or right, you'll use your companion super attacks, respectively. Now, normally, on paper, this is pretty cool, because action RPGs are freaking awesome, as they tend to be. The problem is, it felt kind of like almost lifeless. Like, it was very, very simple combat. And it was actually kind of hard to even keep locked on the enemies half the freaking time. Like, people just kind of jump around a lot, and you're like, okay, I'm going to do this attack. And with the first weapon that you had, it was easy. It's like, okay, rushing, you do the attack, and it kind of just kind of clicked. But for the most part, whenever I switched to, like, axes or a number of other weapons, I'd be doing my swing, and the enemies are moving around a lot to the point where, like, half the time I'm swinging, but it's like I'm not truly connected because the enemy gets out of the way while I'm doing my damn strike. And with my super, there's times where I would do the super attack, and she charges up her big fireball, and as she's doing it to release it, the enemies get the hell out of the way. So it's like, what am I doing? I can't aim it while it's happening. It was ridiculous. It was a little bit on the annoying side. But the other weird aspect to it, though, I should probably get into, I'll use this to segue into the next phase of this discussion, is that you can't change your equipment and you can't change who you are controlling and the field. You can only do those things back at the base being where you go when you leave the map by finding like different, like, you know, checkpoints on the level to go back to the base. And when you go back there, every time you do, you'll get like a weird cutscene that just has the characters randomly having a weird skit, which is also kind of out of place too, because the entire premise of the game is this doom and gloom plot, like end of the world type stuff. And then you go back to the base and the main character's having a chat with another character about what am I going to do for the talent show? And I'm not even making that up. There's a literal set of sketches that happen where she's trying to figure out what to do at a talent show in front of a bunch of people that they never show, you don't know, they even freaking exist. And why is it suddenly so light? I don't freaking know. But a lot of these sketches happen, like I said, literally every time you return to the base, and they're just kind of all over the place. And I think they were originally intended to just kind of get you, like, the feel for the different characters, like, give you some background on them and stuff. But I never quite felt it. And that's a weird thing to say because, again, I've played tons of Idea Factory games. I've played tons of general RPGs. I know the song and dance of getting acclimated with characters and getting interested in their place and stuff. But I never cared for anybody. There's an enemy troop that you come across on the map, never quite got attached to them either. But anyway, I digress. So, like I said earlier, you can't change characters and you can't change gear unless you're back at the base. But while you're back at the base, the other component they have there for you to do is a sort of base construction side game. So while you're there, you can train your characters to get more, like improve their stats. You can buy equipment in the form of accessories, armor, and weapons, and you can get passive abilities. All of these things are done by way of spending resources and money at the appropriate facilities to acquire them. And you can improve these facilities by building extra units to place on the map to say, okay, we have one weapons facility. I'm going to build another weapons facility and place it on the map. So then I can have more weapons, like stronger weapons being sold at the shop. But if you place them in a certain way, so that they're kind of like in like a 2x2 square or 3x3 square, they'll connect to form a giant facility, and it'll be able to, it'll allow you to get even more stuff. Like it'll be a better increment of increase than if you just had three separate things placed around the board. So there's like a little bit of a mini game where you're trying to sort the places out, place them properly on the board, expanding the environment so you can place more facilities, and doing as much as you can as efficiently as you can to get the best purchases. Of course, me, I barely use half of that stuff because here's another weird element to the game is that I basically just upgraded armor and weapons and just steamrolled. Like, I didn't even care about the passive abilities. I didn't need them, which is odd because usually, as you know about me, I typically hoard resources in most games I play because it's a really weird habit I should probably see a psychiatrist about. But I do this, but usually eventually the game hits a point where it's like, okay, you can't do this anymore. If you want to not suck, you need to spend your resources and actually upgrade your party. Didn't happen in this game. I just shot right through it. Like, for the most part, there's like super enemies on the board that you can ignore, and then there's like normal enemies you can just kind of mash through. But for the most part, never had to deal with like passive abilities. So basically, those things are a problem. But then the last main element that annoyed me, in a sense, was just that, quite frankly, the maps are, I guess it's because it's kind of like an end-of-the-world sort of environment, but the worlds were just large, barren spaces. Like, there wasn't a lot out while you were running around and exploring that really made you look and go, huh, that's a pretty nice thing to see there. This is a very engaging environment to run around in. I just felt more like I was just out there running to point A to point, like, next checkpoint, next checkpoint, next checkpoint, not really feeling anything for the world I was running around in. And it's rough to say that because, quite frankly, like I said, normally I love these things. I love what they do. Just something about this game just didn't quite resonate with me. And it's not to say that wasn't a competent game, at least because the controls work well. I mean, aside from like the thing I mentioned earlier about like the enemies kind of moving better than I do, I had no real issue with controlling my characters. I had only one issue where I kind of fell through the map when I jumped off of a cliff onto the lower ledge. But for the most part, it just didn't resonate with me. I didn't quite feel the spark, I guess I want to call it. But I don't know. Ultimately, I feel like a person who might really get down with like a lot of these types of games, like a lot of Idea Factory games, they might come across it differently, because I do know that people will feel differently about these games depending on the person. Like, a lot of people didn't like Death End Request, and I did.
Yeah.
But I feel like this is the time, this is the one rare moment where I felt the opposite, where I was like, this didn't quite resonate with me in that way. But with that said, if you are not concerned about the stuff I mentioned, and your thought is that, well, I'm just going to dabble and use the passive abilities anyway, and I should mention what they are at least. Skills like critical attack bonuses, hit point increases, just things that will make your character a better fighter statistically, not so much with new moves or anything like that, but you'll be able to equip that kind of stuff. But if you feel as though you'll want to be the type to min-max this stuff like the super bosses at the end of the game, then I feel as though maybe there will be more in it for you in that regard. But for me, it just didn't quite click.
No, the only question left is $40. What do you think of it?
I'm going to go with a lower end try. It's not quite a deny it, but it's not an exuberant try it either.
Makes sense.
Yeah, like, I mean, if it was, I mean, for it to be denied, I would have been like, hey, this game is outright jank, and here's, like, nothing worked. But the game had moments where I was okay with it. It just didn't make me feel special, or it didn't click with me as all.
No, nothing to scream to the heavens about, but enjoyable if you pick it up.
Exactly.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Sisters Royale, Five Sisters Under Fire, developed by Alpha System, published by Chorus Worldwide Games, released January 30th on PS4 and Switch for $13.99. Five uniquely talented sisters are squabbling over which of them will marry the angel Yashin. Enjoy the heroic strategies of all five. Chris, tell us about Sisters Royale.
All right, Sisters Royale. Well, I'm very excited about this one because of Alpha Systems. So to give a little bit of background here, Alpha Systems, you know, they're a developer that they've worked on a lot of things. Like they got a pretty long list, but I think their main, like, totally original IP is the Castle of Shikigami series, which was actually the vertical shooter that got me into shmups in the first place. Like I played Gradius 3 as a kid, but apart from that, it's like, you know, this is what really got me into bullet hells. So, yeah, you know, they got Shikigami no Shiro, which bizarrely came out in the U.S. As Mobile Light Force 2 on the PlayStation 2, with the title not being in any way connected to the game and with cover art that has nothing to do with the game. And in fact, Mobile Light Force 1 was a was just an English release of one of the Gunbird games. So... And then 2 came out properly over here, and people will know it because it's got one of the famously bad voice acting and translation jobs. It's the, you know, the one with the I like girls, but now it's about justice being a standout line. And then Castle of Shikigami 3 was, you know, a better game. It came out on the Wii. I mean, it was like better polished, a little bit better translated, and voice acting was still ridiculous, but, you know, a little tighter. But and they added in Time Gal from the Sega CD and / you know, Laserdisc arcades back in the day. So ridiculous stuff. This is a company that makes really good vertical shooters, or has a history of making really good vertical shooters that are completely ridiculous. And thus, I was extremely excited because this is the first like shooter that they made, you know, as an original IP since Castle Shikigami 3 on the Wii, like over 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so really looking forward to this one. So what it is, it's a little bit different than the Shikigami series, and yet not really. So what we have here is a vertical shooter. Of course, it has the storyline of, like, the, you know, six characters are all sisters. Sorry, five characters. I'll get to the sixth, actually. But there are five characters that are all sisters, and for whatever reason, they're born with these mysterious powers that, you know, translates to being able to shoot magic bullets. And if they all can find a way to work together, they can defeat an evil demon called Satan, S-E-Y-T-A-N. But anyways. It's
one way to skirt around it.
Yeah. But they won't cooperate because all five of them are in love with the same angelic boy called you know, Yashin, or Yashikins as they call him in the translation. And so you basically get to, like, pick one of the characters, and, like, not only do you get their name and their, like, chibi, like, actual game character and portrait, but it also says, like, eldest, second eldest, middle sister, second youngest, and youngest, which is kind of great. And yeah, it's just all about, like, going through these very short stages. And instead of being a vertical shooter in the sense of flying, you're actually walking around on the ground. Funny enough, when I told a friend about that, he was like, oh, like in The Adventures of Dino Ricky. And I was like, yeah, exactly like that, actually. Weird that that was the only other one he could think of. But so, yeah, you're actually walking around on the ground. And so they actually put, like, different hazards on the ground that make things really interesting. For instance, the second stage, which is, oh, each sister, by the way, is, like, kind of, you know, loosely associated with some kind of element. So like you got the Fire Sisters, the oldest, and the Ice Sisters, the second oldest, things like that. And like in the Ice Sisters stage, there will actually be ice patches on the ground that will cause you to slip. And so you have slip mechanics on top of a bullet hell. So that's really,
oh, wow.
I have never seen that before. And then there's like the Forest Sister, the second youngest, who she has like wind tunnels, or like, yeah, basically fans that blow wind all throughout her stage. And so you have to like, you know, push back against that. That's a little more, I think I've seen that at least one more time. But so you get through the stages and fight the sister at the end. The sister's always the boss. You know, there's exactly five stages because even, you know, you fight through all your sister stages and you actually fight through your own stage, and they have you fight yourself as your conscience, quote unquote. That way, I guess they just didn't have to, like, you know, change up too many things to avoid the whole, you know, person meeting themselves thing. Anyways, so, you know, once you do, you get a nice little, you know, kind of cutscene at the end. And like I said, yeah, throughout this whole adventure, they're just brutally insulting each other, like, constantly. It's actually really funny. Weirdly enough, it's extremely well written. I did not, apart from a couple of typos, I did not find any, like, bad translation stuff here. It's just, like, it's just genuinely absurd in the first place. It's not, like, you know, a regular story told badly.
Yeah.
And, yeah, as far as, like, the options goes and things like that, it's actually fairly simplistic. You have a practice mode and, you know, game start, and, you can choose from three difficulties, which are actually pretty, pretty good. Like, the entry level to this game is very, like, the bar is very low. If you put this on easy mode, you can give this to a beginner, like, you know, shmup fan, and they'll be able to get through it, especially, of course, since there's infinite continues, which is interesting because normally Alpha System would start you with a limited amount of continues and start adding continues to the stock based on how long you've been playing in total.
Yeah, I've seen that in a bunch of shmups.
Yeah, this one just starts you off with everything, you know?
That's good.
So, yeah, they kind of simplified it to the point where I would believe that it was a mobile game if it wasn't a Switch exclusive. As far as I know, it's a Switch exclusive. I haven't seen it anywhere else.
PS4.
And, oh, it's on PS4. Okay. Okay, cool. I didn't see that info. It was like Sisters Royale. It's on the Switch. And anyways, that, you know. So another cool thing about it, of course, is that since it's a vertical shooter, it does have tape mode. So you can, you know, get it to work vertically for your flip grip or TV that can turn around. yeah, so like the other thing about it is that it does have one item of DLC, at least on the Switch eShop. And I was very pleased to find out it is a character from Castle of Shikigami that you can play through as. yeah, Ozette, as what she was called in the other three games. And this one she's called Ode, and she's the world savior or something like that. It's actually funny because her dialogue is actually kind of ridiculous and seems badly translated. I don't know if that was on purpose or not. And yeah, she plays exactly like in the Castle Shikigami games. In fact, if you are familiar with the Shikigami games, each of the sisters actually does play almost identically to a classic Shikigami character. So, like, you know, the oldest sister is like Ko, and, you know, the ice sister is like, I forget his name. Shouldn't have tried to remember names. But they have the regular shot, and then they have another shot that you hold down, and it's different. Like, for one character, it sends out a tracer thing that, like, defeats all the enemies as they appear on screen. But, you know, if it gets overwhelmed, then stuff starts getting past it. You got one that just, like, throws out three blades that can spin as you move, and, you know, things like that. And they also all have screen clearing bombs that are different for each character, which are nice. But yeah, like, apart from that, it is just like, it's a great update to the Shikigami series. It's lacking in the, you know, the campy fun of like a really, really bad translation job, but I guess those don't really exist anymore. You know, like, everybody's got a translator now.
Yeah.
But gameplay wise, it's very fun. It's exactly as tight as I thought it would be. It has interesting new mechanics, like I said, such as floor hazards and, you know, treasure chests that you can shoot for coins, which equal points. Yeah, it's a little on the easy side and definitely on the short side. But I mean, this is the kind of game that you just play over and over again and try to get the best score and things like that.
Yeah.
Or just play through it each time with each character and, you know, try to get all the stories. Oh, and there is no two-player mode in this.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, it's only a one-player game, so you don't get to, like, match up sisters and have them do more dialogue. The game I've seen do that most recently on Switch is Caladrius Blaze, but that one's more about, like, fan service than humor.
Yeah. Well, Sisters Royale at $14, what do you think?
I think it's an excellent purchase for fans of this shmup genre. And again, especially for people who are into Shikigami no Shiro / Castle of Shikigami. It's cute and chibi and like all that other stuff. Definitely for fans of like something a little more absurd than like just your ship going against other ships. Like I said, it's a little short, and even in hard mode, it's not, it's not like a top end like bullet hell or anything like that, but it's really fun, and I think that it's definitely worth the money.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, next game to talk about is called Bridge Constructor Ultimate Edition, developed by Clockstone, published by HeadUp, released January 31st on the Switch for $14.99. In Bridge Constructor, you can become an accomplished bridge builder without any formal training. Set your imagination and creativity free. Purnell, tell us about your time with Bridge Constructor Ultimate Edition.
This is a game that if you were to have told me a little ways back that I would have found it enjoyable, I would have called you dense and wrong. That has been proven to be quite true, though. Bridge Constructor Portal, if you're a fan of like puzzle solving games, and even in a sense, even kind of Zen-esque puzzle solving games, you're going to be in for a treat with this little bad boy. It's such a fun time. It's not like a ton of bells and whistles that go to it either. It's just a functional game with a lot of content. What that is at its core, you are a person in charge of, well, building bridges. And the way you do that is you go to a number of different areas across a map. And when you go there, you're set up with a puzzle where you're trying to connect one end of a road to another by way of building a bridge. Now, to build this bridge, you're given access to a number of different materials. Wood, steel, concrete, and cable wires. That's it. No crazy stuff, just those things. But you are meant to take that across various environments, construct a bridge under a certain budget because each of those materials costs a certain amount of money, and build a bridge that can accommodate cars crossing over it. Now, what that entails in actuality is you're going to spend a lot of time watching cars careen off into the abyss to certain deaths. But that's part of the job of being a bridge constructor, which, for the record, could you imagine a world where that's actually how bridge construction was tested? They just built a bridge across the Susquehanna Valley, let cars drive over it, and when five people die, well, back to the drawing board. We're going to shut this road down, figure out what went wrong, and try it again. And after 75 dead families, we finally got it right.
Nailed it.
I'll say a prayer for everyone we lost for this. But as a video game, that's just comedy. You just watch the cars go over, get a little laughter, a little frustration, and double back to make sure, just figure out what you did wrong. Now, it ends up seeming like it would be a simple thing. Like, you know, you've seen bridges in your life. You've driven across bridges. You know they're usually held up by steels, like concrete spires. You know, there's concrete going across them, whatever. Steel bridges going across them. But this game likes to throw a bunch of curveballs at you. Like, it might be a road where you might have to have like a bit of a slope where the road needs to go upwards and then possibly downwards. There might be a road where you don't have as many, you know, support beams to be able to put up concrete as you thought, because concrete can only be built in specified locations on the map. It gives you a lot of problems that take a simple concept as build a bridge across a body of water and turns into a crazy series of puzzles that have so many solutions that you're kind of dumbfounded by the fact they even exist. And the interface with which you do it is actually very simple. I'll admit, if you do happen to have Joy-Con drift, though, I'm very sorry. I say this because I have Joy-Con drift, and I am very sorry. Yeah, I got to get that spray can stuff. But if you don't have Joy-Con drift, then this game is great in that regard because it's very precise as you use the Joy-Con to move around and select different spots with which you want to place and build structures. And there's a grid option that can be brought up so you can even see it like a pixel by pixel way. Like, okay, if I build this here and go across three squares, boom, I'll drop it there. So it makes it so that you can be a lot more precise with how you construct stuff. You can save your projects across the level. So let's say, for example, you start a level, it feels though you're having a bit of a rough time, you want to come back to it later. You can save where you left off, leave the level, come back, and then reload the map you started. Like, it's very user-friendly in that regard. I genuinely love the game. There's a lot of different levels you get to try, and it includes all the DLC that they had from, like, I guess, previous releases. So there is a trains version of where you're trying to get trains across the board, which honestly kind of changed the dynamic a bit because you have a constant heavy structure bulleting across the water, which means that it affects construction in a whole other way. And then there's also these weird seasonal ones, which, believe it or not, I actually can't do any right now because the seasonal levels only open up during the right time of year. So there's a winter level, but you can only do it in December, apparently, is when it opens up. I'm actually looking at them right now. That's what I can tell you. Easter Island is only available from March 15th until May 15th, literally. And Spooky Island is October 15th to November 15th.
Oh, that's crazy.
It is crazy. But I think it means that they intend for you to be playing this for a long time, or they intend for you to finagle your Switch clock. Either way, they give you some time-sensitive content that you can come back to and play later. It's honestly a fantastic game. And it's weird because I can't remember when it was, but a ways back I played Bridge Constructor Portal. And the way that game helped me think originally that I was able to enjoy the whole Bridge Constructor concept was because it was Portal, which means you had the portal humor, you had the actual concept of making people shoot out of portals and like careen across chasms and whatever. But you go back to this here, which is literally the base game that Bridge Constructor Portal was based on, and it's legitimately still fun. It's very enjoyable.
Go ahead.
I was about to say, I wholeheartedly recommend this game. If you're into like the idea of like Zen puzzle construction, This is a can't miss title. I think it's a fantastic time and worth someone's money. And the content's up there too.
$15, your official verdict?
Oh, buy it. Definitely a buy it.
Yeah, I love the Bridge Constructor games. They're a lot of fun.
Very much so. And it's just the thing is like, if you were to go, it's like, you ever think someone's going, like, what do you think of this game? What is this game? Oh, you sit down and you try to build a bridge so people can get to work. That's the game. And you're supposed to get excited for that. But you should, because it's great.
It's really well done. Does it have touchscreen controls?
Yes, it does. I'm actually using my stylus to play it. Though, I will say that I honestly kind of prefer not using the stylus. Because I have one of those like thick rubber touch styles that I think everyone kind of has to have. I'm not sure if there's any like fine point ones available out there for this thing. But if I had one of those, I'd probably feel differently. But with the one I have, I find myself having difficulty knowing, because I remember how I told you earlier how like kind of pinpoint precise is by like squares like that are come up on a grid. It's hard to sometimes tell if I'm going over the space I want to stop at. So I'll like be moving the device or moving the piece, thinking I'm stopping. It's like, nope, I went one square too far because I'm covering it up or whatnot. Or the actual like the squishiness of the stylus coming down covers more space than the actual center point of what I'm moving. So it's not really so much that it's bad. It's just, it might just as well be my stylus. And I'll do honestly, if there's like a more precise stylus out there, that would probably do the trick.
Yeah.
But with that said, if you're in a situation where you just kind of want to putz around and play, you need to want to drag it around, I don't think you're really going to go wrong with using your finger.
Cool. Chris, were you going to ask something?
No, I was just going to echo that I think Bridge Constructor is really fun.
Oh, you've played it too?
Yeah, I reviewed. Actually reviewed it way back on the Wii U.
Wow.
It's been out that long? Damn.
Yeah, it has been.
Damn, we've been covering games that long.
7 years, Wii, baby.
Seven fucking years.
Wii U, Switch, and Wii coverage. So many Wiis.
No, my lord. Anyway, we got one more game to talk about. That is called Monster Viator, or Viator, however the hell you say it. Who developed knows? By Hitpoint, published by Chemco, released February 5th on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $14.99. Unable to remember who he is, Cutler is mysteriously able to communicate with monsters. He soon comes across Ira, a shepherd who controls monsters with a harp, and sets out together on a journey to uncover his memories. A fairy tale like adventure with a legendary hero with 1,000 monsters, a fountain of truth, and a witch unfolds. Chris, you got Windows 10, so you get to cover these games now.
Yay. Well, this is a good start.
Tell us about Monster Viator.
I've been saying Viator, but
Viator
I
works too. Viator.
Is it a real, I'm going to find out right now if it's even a real word. Apparently there's a Viator TripAdvisor company.
Oh,
but I don't know if it's actually a word. Interesting. Well, it's a game about TripAdvisor. okay. So anyways, so this is a Chemco RPG made in conjunction with Hitpoint, which I've mentioned many times before that Hitpoint makes my favorite Chemco RPGs. Nothing against X-Create. I tend to gravitate more towards Hitpoint stuff. This is the kind of game that is squarely aimed at providing a new experience and yet the warm nostalgic feeling of a Super Nintendo RPG, like specifically. You know, it's got big colorful sprites that always bounce up and down when they're standing still. And it's got, you know, these really interesting stories. But of course, in the modern side of things, they have, you know, fully orchestrated soundtracks at, you know, with real instruments and stuff, and generally, you know, good writing that's not, you know, trying to cram an entire story into three lines of dialogue. In fact, I would accuse this game of being slightly wordy, but we'll get to that. So, the game that this one directly sort of follows up on is Legend of the Tetrarchs, which I covered on Switch some time ago. And it was such a good game that I went back and beat it after reviewing it, which is very rare for me in these long form RPGs. it's a really good game. And this one absolutely follows in its footsteps. It features the same controls, the same menu, the same style of graphics, and of course, our favorite, the poncho, which is...
Yay, poncho's there.
Yeah, poncho's there. Oh yeah, there's the look. Ponchos are like this little blob that has like a cartoon bird face drawn onto it. And what I love about this game is that the way it's introduced is that Coulter here, the kid with the mask on his face, he wakes up, he has no memories, and he runs into a Kate Sith, which is a cat, which you can see in these screenshots too, that has wings on its shoulder and wings on its hind feet. And you know, it's like that kind of sidekick animal character with attitude. Yeah, there he is, Ishiri down there. And, as soon as he meets him, he meets a hostile monster, which, like, roars and, like, shakes the bushes, and then it hops out, and it's just a poncho. And you just learn how to fight, you know, by fighting it. The game is really charming, and actually, I found it funnier than Legend of Tetrarchs. Legend of Tetrarchs is a little dry in terms of like the personality of the game, even though it has a lot of personality and things like design and set pieces and you know dialogue and stuff. This game actually is a lot more on the we're really having fun with this side of things, like almost like a Sega CD game or you know something in that. Early 90s like Sega RPG oeuvre. So that's to say about the story. You know, he meets a girl and she's also a monster tamer. He finds out he's a monster tamer. He has no other memories besides that he's trying to find his brother. She decides to help him after he recovers her magical harp through the first dungeon. And all the rest of the characters that join you are monsters that you, but it's not like So you collect, you recruit monsters. It's not like a Pokemon type thing where you just collect them. They actually each have their own bit of story and, you know, their own dialogues and things like that. Like they're actually characters in the story, even though they usually don't function or they usually don't drop in on dialogue too much, except for the Kate Sith. But you can, what I really like about it is because you collect a lot of them. They all equip the same items, so like the same armor and weapons and stuff, and when you drop one into your party, you can choose to have it just straight up swap gear with the character you were just using. So it almost eliminates the need to like re-equip characters as you put them back in your party, which is fantastic. Especially because, you know, you kind of want to build your party based on your environment. If you're in a fireplace, you want wind characters because wind, you know, fire is weak to wind. And then, you know, wind is weak to water or something like that. I forget exactly. It's three elements and they go in a circle like that. So yeah, it's really cool like that. So the other mechanics that it shares with Legends of Tetrarch, I'll go ahead and go over again just briefly because they do bear repeating. They're very different versus other RPGs. So for one, while you do purchase, items in this game and things like that, there's another system whereby when you have an item, you can choose to strengthen it. And that's just done in the menu and it just straight up costs money. This process is so expensive that you will always need money in this game. I was running out of money in Legend of Tetrarchs in the end game. And this game is the same way because every time you get a new item and depending on how advanced the item is, it might clean you out to try and gain a couple of levels in that weapon.
Yeah.
But if you're diligent about it, you can end up like ahead of the curve, and there's no difficulty settings on this game. It is even better than that. Regular battles tend to be pretty no fuss. But boss battles in each dungeon are, unless it's storyline based, the bosses of dungeons are, optional and much, much, much harder than the other fights. So they're almost like, you know, hidden boss battles or something. So you may end up two dungeons forward in the story, like going back two dungeons to fight the boss of that dungeon so that you could finally defeat it. Yeah, it's really cool as a system. It's that instead of giving you like the option to just crank up the difficulty and the damage, it just peppers in these super hard fights that you can just avoid if you want. So I really like that. And of course, if you do find the whole thing too challenging, it does have DLC, the same exact one as Tetrarch's, where you can double your damage across the board. You can eliminate random encounters, or you can double or triple your experience or something like that. The problem is on Windows 10, I couldn't figure out how to buy it. I could not find it. Like, it had a Windows 10 button that takes you to the Microsoft store where it just takes you to the sales page for the game itself. And I could not, I tried twice for like a long time.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they don't have it live. I'm looking at the game store page and even that doesn't have any DLC listed for it. So right? I wonder if it's just not active yet.
Maybe.
It's possible. Technically, you're playing it pre-release because it as of us recording this, it releases in an hour.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't actually. That's probably why none of those are available yet. They're probably going to show up at midnight when the game launches.
Okay, well, fortunately, I bought two of them on Legend of the Tetrarchs already, so I know I know what the deal is on them. It does make the game a little bit easier, but towards the end game, of course, it's still terrible. Not terrible, but like, you know, it's terrifying. Yeah. Let's call it that. So, and there's another thing that another battle system that I really love in both of these games, and that is that you can't go to an inn. You have no items that are usable because the entirety of your power that you have as a group of characters can all be expended in one battle, and it will be fully recovered at the end of that battle. If you survive a battle with no magic left, one character hanging on by a shred of like, you know, just a thread of life, and like you finally get that last hit on a super hard boss, as soon as you are out of that battle, you're back to normal.
I love when games have that.
Yeah. And this game is great about that because it really encourages you to not just smash the fight button, like seek out combos, because instead of using magic points, it uses skill points, which recover every turn. And some of the better moves require a lot of skill points. And so you can set up your characters to where they recover more skill points, or they start out with more skill points, so that you can get those moves brought out in the order that you want to bring them out. And so it's all about building like this machine of like, you know, character combos and like, and moves and stuff like that, instead of just mashing the fight button until you gain levels, which is fantastic. And yeah, it has the Carmine system, which a Carmine is an item that you find throughout the game in dungeons and things like that. It is an equipable passive ability that is like a permanent thing. So you can have one character equipped with, you know, revive once per battle if you die. One character can be like, start with 50% bonus defense and give 20% as well to your teammates. You know, different things like that. And you have like one slot at the beginning, and then you eventually unlock a second slot. And Tetrarch's had one where it was like each character had one that was just automatic, but I didn't see that in this one, so it must not be. But it's still really cool because like it, on top of equipping items and weapons that, you know, increase your parameters, you can also equip these passive, you know, boosts that you can sort of customize it to the way you like to play JRPGs. And yeah, just the graphics are like amazing. It's, you know, that Super Nintendo sprite style, but like monsters are amazingly detailed and bright and colorful, and, you know, everything looks great. And the music is fantastic. Like, I love the regular battle theme. And once again, I'm begging Kemco, please let us purchase these soundtracks separately. I can't ever find them. I still want to buy Legend of the Tetrarchs's you know, OST, and especially this one. I think this one's even better, actually. Like, that, both the regular and boss battle music is just like, you know, metal AF, as well as just sounding really JRPG, and just like, I could listen to it all day. So,
well, it sounds like Kemco has another winner. So for $15, what is your verdict?
Yeah, if you are getting into Kemco RPGs, this is a must-buy. If you are a fan of Super Nintendo RPGs and you want to see a little bit of an update on something that's going to feel very familiar, absolutely must-buy. For just general RPG fans, I'd still say buy it.
Awesome.
It's a good experience, and these just keep getting better, so technically this is the best one. I can't wait for it to be on Switch. I'm going to buy it.
Sounds good. I'm going to have to pick this one up as well. I am looking forward to it going on sale at midnight. I love the Kemco RPGs. I've got them all so far. So
nice. I'm missing a few still, but
they're like,
you know,
Pokemon. I just got to catch them all on Xbox. Yeah.
At least I'm like trying to get through them now. Like I said, I actually dedicated a good chunk of time to like really burning through Legend of Tetrarchs, because I just really, that one's kind of a standout for me. And I'm hoping Frayn Odyssey is the same way. I know I covered it on 3DS, but I bought it on Switch and I haven't started it yet. But that's an earlier hit point game.
Yeah, there's so many of them, I can't keep track of them anymore.
Yeah, but this one, I'm definitely going to be looking for this one on the consoles so that I can play it on the go.
Awesome. Well, yeah, that is it for y'all three. Pernell, thanks for being here. Chris, thanks for being here. Cole, thanks for being quiet this whole time.
We did it.
But also for being here.
7 years, we're finally done with this episode.
It's been a long one. That's only been an hour.
All right.
It's 6 years and 500. I was trying to do y'all the numbers crazy. Like I'm too tired to do math.
No, there is a little bit more show. We have two more games to talk about, so I'm going to let go of you three and move on with the celebration. So does anyone have any final words?
Sleep is the most important thing you can do with your body, I guess. I don't know. Get more of it. I need to. I'm failing it, as you can clearly tell. Sleep more.
The second most important is Skyrim.
Imagine if you could play Skyrim in your sleep.
I can. No. I have done so.
Just wakes up like, how'd I get all these levels?
I've been playing it this whole time, actually.
All right, moving on. Tim Ekibis is here. Tim, how are you doing?
Hey, good. I'm doing well. I'm here.
You are on our 7th anniversary episode.
Aw, happy anniversary.
Yeah, we're 7 now.
7 years old, man.
Yeah, time flies when you're pretending to have fun.
Yeah, no, believe me, I know it. We just did our, like, the Fat Gatsby Blank of the Year Awards was like our 11th or 12th edition of the awards. So that means I've been podcasting for that long.
Damn.
Yup. What year? Hang on. Well, it was X-Strike's 5th anniversary. That was around when we started, but I don't know. It all runs together. It must have been 2008.
Oh, my back hurts.
Yeah, yeah, so it's a lot of, yeah.
We were young babes back then.
Young babes. Now, you know, it was still, I don't know, not everybody had a podcast back then. Now anybody can do this.
Yeah, as evidenced by the fact that I'm doing this.
Well, that we're still, I mean, like 7 years ago. Not everybody was doing a podcast. Now it's, you know, it's the punchline of a joke that, you know, every 30-something white guy has his own podcast. And we were way ahead of that curve, you know. We built up a long legacy. Many hours sitting in front of microphones talking about video games and other nonsense. There's pathos and history and lore behind our work here.
One of these days I got to get on board your shenanigans.
Yeah, I don't do so many shenanigans anymore. Not as much as I used to. We went from like weekly to like, you know, different shows that would be on, you know, we had like one or two a week in Fat Gatsby for a while. And now it's just like, you know, Weiss moved and Ben has a baby and a second one coming. So he's not really, he doesn't really so much have the time. So just me and Dave, every now and then we're like, we should do one of these things. We should get together. We should talk about this old thing or this new thing or whatever. And we'll get out a few in the year, but otherwise we're just busy thinking more about the, video stuff.
Hey, whatever works.
Whatever works. Still fun.
Yeah.
Still plugging away. Get them blank of the years in.
Blank of the years.
Blank of the years.
I think we did like one or two official like thing of the thing awards.
Mm-hmm.
Like thing of the year awards brought to you by Scotch Brite or something like this. Every award we gave some stupid presentation and sponsor to it.
Sure.
Just because why not, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, here we are to talk about a game.
Yes. All these years later, and we're still doing reviews. And next game to talk about is called Rechnum, developed by Nape Games, published by Jandusoft. It released January 31st on Switch and PS4 for $4.99. In Rechnum, you play as the role of the Princess Cherry, who must advance through 6 different completely explorable zones, loot chests with crystals that will increase her passive skills in order to advance. Each zone introduces different elements which must be evaluated in order to be able to advance, to examine how to advance, to examine the behavior of the enemies, and to fight bosses. Tim, what does any of that mean?
Was that the copy, or did you stumble over your words there?
Little column A, little column B.
It's not the most English.
No.
Not the most English. Well, at least this game's only $5. So this game reminds me of like the freeware DOS platformers I would get my hands on when we got a computer in our house, the shareware stuff, just like these really like very basic sort of action adventure platformer dealies, none of which had like any terribly strong hook to it or terribly great gameplay. And this reminds me of like one of those. Like, here it is in the year 2020, Rechnum damn near killed him. So yeah, you play as like a little elf girl. Like the cover art anyway, inspires like thoughts of like early 90s anime. Like, you look at that and you're like, oh, that looks like the art for like Lunar. So think, yeah, like that era of, I guess, anime art, or that style, I guess. I don't know. The like main character kind of looks like Sailor Mars. So in the art anyways, in the game, she's just like a stumpy little elf girl. So yeah, it's a 2D action platformer deal. You can swing your sword. You can fire some arrows. You have unlimited arrows. You can jump. Jumping also takes the form of swimming in later levels where you just jump a bunch. And yeah, you traverse these levels in pretty straightforward, action platformer fashion, and you get through like some amount of levels, and then you fight a boss, and then you move on to the next world, which has a different theme of, environment. It's all pretty basic stuff. The graphics are plain, I guess I would say. The graphics are pretty plain. Like, you recognize what things are there, but they're not, especially inspiring. The backgrounds are not especially detailed. The animations aren't, like, good.
It's not rewriting the rules on how to do an action platform.
No, it's just like, it's not a throwback in the sense of like, it's just like, okay, this is just the basic of basics. We got as many frames of animation as we need, and you traverse these levels, and there will be enemies, which are pretty easy to kill because you've got them arrows, so you can pretty much take things out from a distance. I was never really in threat of dying from enemies. I guess I will say that. Because they'll do like a little bit of damage, and there seem to be pretty decent amounts of health scattered around. You level up your character by getting gems out of chests. And this is one of the things that annoys me, because you'll crack open a chest, which will take like two strikes from your weapon or bow. And if you hit it with a sword, like the chest goes flying away, and you gotta like run up to it. But the thing will just sit there and like spout out gems for like a good 10 seconds. It's not like, oh, here's a gem or here's a bunch of gems really fast. Like, it'll keep spouting them out. So you just got to sit there and keep like running back and forth. Like, it's a real, it doesn't sound like a big deal, but as many times as there, as much as there are treasure chests and levels, like it's kind of time consuming. And once you pick up a certain amount of gems, then your character will upgrade, like either her speed or her jumping ability. And there are several, you don't assign like, oh, you have this many gems, so you buy this upgrade. You hit a certain amount, you hit a number, and then the stat goes up. And when you're done with a level, it goes away. All those upgrades only last for that level. Okay.
Oh, man.
And then they go, then the evil empress will make you weaker. There's always like a line of dialogue there just to let you know, like, oh, okay. It's not like every single, it would be one thing if it was like, oh, you got more powerful throughout a world, and then at the end of it, it made you start over. But it's like literally every level. So it's kind of like, what's the point, really? I don't see like what the advantages to being able to go faster or jump a little higher. Like, there's an occasion where jumping a little higher helps, but definitely like the moving faster. I mean, like, if you just want to get through the level faster, it's probably faster to just not stop an open chest, because it takes so long for the gems, so ridiculously long for the gems to spill out of it. And when I mentioned, that definitely bugged me, but that wasn't really a deal breaker. It was just kind of like, okay, whatever. What started to drive me up the wall is that I mentioned that I did not die to enemies. However, there are hazards in the environment, like platforms that might slam down, or if you're standing on them, slam you into the ceiling, or like fires or spikes or various other things that will kill you in one hit, and you will just die, and you will go back to the beginning of the level. There is no checkpoints in this game. And boy, if you have listened to my reviews over the course of the past, I don't know, not 7 years, but several years, you might know how much I hate games that don't have checkpoints and are lean into instant death a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Which is to say, I hate them a lot, because I only got so much time for games with the kid running around. And man, when you start wasting my time, I start getting real salty. This game does that, and I don't like that at all. It's like the fourth level in the game. You get to the end, and there's just kind of these, I won't say elaborate, but somewhat difficult, because the platforming isn't so great, like platforming puzzles where you're on the aforementioned moving platforms, and you have to be careful not to get crushed one way or the other on them. And it's just like, it's right there at the end of the level, and just getting the timing and getting your character light through there, and it's just so, can be so annoying. When you die, you're boom, right back at the beginning of this long ass level, because it's the one right before the boss. And then you go into the boss, and the boss, like the first boss, like, I just started laughing because it like shoots these energy orbs at you. And if any of the orbs hit you, you die instantly. And you just respawn like right there in the boss room. Like, yeah, it's quick, but it's just like silly. Like, why do I even have a health bar if you're just going to have so many things? But if you touch the boss, then it only does minor damage. But like, I mean, the boss wasn't like that tough, but it was just like hysterical when I enter the room and I immediately get hit by an energy ball, and like I immediately respawn. I'm like, wait, what happened here? What's going on? What are you doing? This is ridiculous. And then things just kind of only get worse from there, because instead of doing like platforming, you're doing swimming, which also doesn't feel good. Like it's like you have lead in your shoes, because you really gotta like mash on that button to swim. And then it's like you'll be swimmy in through a level, and then you'll die, and then you're right back to the beginning of the level, and I'm just sitting here like, why are you doing this to me? The music's all right. I'll say that much. But yeah, playing the game, playing the game is okay. Like, it's okay. If it wasn't so harsh with the death mechanics, I could maybe get into the simplicity of what it is presenting, of like, oh, this is just a, you know, kind of a breezy action adventure thing that I don't got to think about too much. But it's just like, I do have to think about it too much to keep myself from dying, and standing in front of treasure chests while they spill out gems is just like a bore. And then your abilities go away anyways. So like, I don't know what's going on here. I just don't.
Well, you at least got to let me know. $5. Is it worth it?
I don't think it's worth, even for $5. This seems like one of those games you're going to end up like looking on the eShop one week, and it's going to be on sale for like 99 cents. And at that price, you might get a kick out of it. But for $5, you could probably spend that $5 better, and you could certainly spend your time better. So I would give it, the old deny.
Oh, well, always good having you on, Tim. Thank you for being here. Do you have any final thoughts before we move on?
I have no thoughts. No thoughts at this
Nothing
time.
At all?
Nothing at all. Nope.
All right, and finally tonight we are being joined by our good friend Jacob Garner. Jacob, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I was accidentally late to this review, so, you know,
proud
good
of you.
Times.
I wasn't going to mention anything because, you know, there is no being late in an MP3, but...
Well, true, but, you know, also keeping up appearances and stuff like that, but, you know, I guess I could just tell our viewers I was actually late because I forgot what time it was, because I was playing Headliner Novi News, which Cole reviewed a few episodes back, so, you know, that was a pretty... It's a really good game, actually. Yeah.
What game was that? What did you do in that one?
In what, Novi News?
Yeah.
Or Headliner? So pretty much you decide what is going to get aired on the news, both in print and on like a, you know, news show. And then the next day you have to deal with the ramifications of it.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you talk to, like, citizens in a town, like, you're approached by, like, shadowy organizations, the government is breathing down your neck, like, the leader of the country is very much based on Donald Trump, it seems, at least with the addiction to Twitter. And so I just like hit, I was just like, ah, fuck it. I'll finish off this like today's thing. Cause you had messaged me. It was like, where you at, sucker? And I was like, oh, damn it. Is it 9 o'clock already? It's actually like 9:15. I did say ish to be fair. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so I was just like, ah, fuck it. I'll finish out today's stuff. And then like, I start seeing like the next day stuff, and I'm like, what's going on? And it's like, oh no, I need to keep playing, but I need to film, I need to record this review. Shit. So I was just like, Jess, don't touch anything.
So is everything paused right now?
Yeah, it's paused.
You could have explained this to me and we could have done it like an hour later if you needed.
It's okay.
I have wrestling paused, to be fair.
Yeah, see? So we paused, you know.
Our so neither of us want to be here, basically. That's what we're saying.
Well, it's the podcast. We never want to be here.
Very true. Very,
very
true.
Yeah, very, very true. It'd be better if we were just playing video games. Duh.
Speaking of playing video games, we do have one more review we got to take care of. Do you want to jump into that?
Wait, I was talking about playing video games.
I know. I was.
That's not a very good segue. Joe. That was a terrible segue.
You shut your face.
All right, well, fine. This will be the quietest review we've ever had.
Good thing it's the last one, because final game to talk about tonight is called Sky Rogue, developed and published by Fractal Phase, released January 31st on Xbox One for $19.99. Sky Rogue is a fwooshy roguelite action flight simulator. Blow things up over land, sea, and air, and on an infinite number of procedurally generated islands. And yes, the description called it fwooshy.
Fwooshy. Yes. Like, how do they spell that?
Fwooshy.
Okay. Like, whoosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I get it. I'd go. It is fwooshy. I mean, did you play it or no?
No, I did not.
Okay. All right. So you came to me with this review, like this game to review, and I was just like, all right, I'll watch like 5 minutes of gameplay, and I didn't even watch I think I watched like 30 seconds, and I was like, fuck yeah, I'm in. So pretty much, yeah, it's a flight sim. Now granted, it's not Ace Combat. It's more arcadey. I don't know. I was thinking of like Top Gun for the NES. Like, it reminded me of that. Like, for some reason, like, and the games are not particularly similar, but it reminded me of that, but this like nice mesh between the two. I don't know. It's got awesome retro graphics. Wow. All right. So I'm all over the place on this review. So actually, now that you mentioned that it's procedurally generated, that makes a whole lot more sense. So pretty much, you start on each mission and you get, like, it starts day one, blah, 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 of the mission. And I don't know if it's possible to have more days of it. I never got to more days because I either died, which erases all of your upgrades that you've bought, or I succeeded and I guess I didn't need more days to kill things. I don't know how that works. So whatever. Anyway, so your objectives are pretty clear. It's just like, you know, all right, you go in and you have to blow up this thing. You know, it could be a building. It could be, you have to shoot down 5 drones. You have to destroy this aircraft carrier thing up in the sky. Or you have to like blow up this other jet. So it gives you your mission thing. There's no real bonus. Like, I don't know if you ever played like Star Wars X-Wing, but like most of the missions there, or like Wing Commander, like, yeah, you could complete the main mission, but there were also like sub missions usually. Mm-hmm. So they're really like, I at least never encountered that. But pretty much it's just, you know, there's your mission and anything else you kill is a bonus. Gotcha. So it's pretty much just, you know, like, I mean, there's drones that you can kill, and the drones, what, like, if you have 3 of them at a time, you know, they're not so bad, but when you get like 5 or 7 of them, flying around, they can get pretty damn wily. And the game isn't particularly difficult. It's either just, you know, I died out of my own incompetence.
I can see that happening quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, there were a couple of times I'd crash into the ground because I didn't pull up enough.
That's what she said. I don't know.
It's a, that That doesn't really fit.
I it felt right in the moment.
That's what she said.
Anyway.
So after you successfully complete your mission, which has you landing back on your like aircraft carrier, which is totally not the helicarrier from the Avengers movies. It's totally not that, by the way. any similarities are just they're who knew, you know? It totally looks like it, by the way. So after you land on that, which there was one time I nearly, one time I actually did crash into it trying to land, which the best part is that like landing involves, you flying up close and hitting A when prompted. And somehow I still managed to fail doing that. Other
proud,
times,
very proud.
Yeah. But other times, I was pulling off shit that was like Top Gun Maverick kind of stuff. That stuff I was pretty impressed by. Unfortunately, I wasn't recording, which, damn it, I'll have to do that later. So you can upgrade your stuff, you can upgrade your weapons, you can upgrade, like, you can buy different planes to fly in. I got a medium plane. That's all, like, that's all I ever lived long enough to unlock. and the medium plane was okay. Like, it, I don't know. I preferred the initial default plane. It was a lot quicker. It couldn't take as much hits, though. So you really had to be quick on that shit.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just the graphics have a nice retro feel to it. You know, the gameplay's tight. I mean, it's not Ace Combat 7, which I reviewed last year. However, I was pulling off shit that was like pretty similar and like had that, like, you know, oh shit, I almost died while blowing up the bad guy. You know, I'm like, I'm like 10 meters away and I like just fired off a missile and killed him. There is no reason why I'm still alive. you know, that level of shit. And it's just, it's an entertaining game. It's fun as hell. Like, I highly recommend it. Wait, how many games have I reviewed this year?
I don't know. It's only January. Two?
It's February, you fuck.
It is February. The game came out in January. I'm looking at my notes. Give me a break.
Damn it.
We recorded this in mid-January. It is now mid-February.
We didn't record this mid-January. Don't lie to our listeners. Oh, yeah. I reviewed Dragon Ball Z Kakarot. That's right. Okay. So of the two games I've reviewed so far, this is my favorite. Which I realize is not exactly the most stellar.
Yeah, that's not setting a high bar.
You know what? Whatever. All right, it's honestly a lot of fun. This is probably going to end up in my favorite games of 2020. If you enjoy Ace Combat, if you enjoy Wing Commander, X-Wing, the old Top Gun games for the PlayStation, any of that kind of flight sim stuff, definitely check it out. It's a great arcade feel. The graphics are pretty. I love it.
Well, then tell us, is it worth the $20 asking price?
It is. I mean, you know, me being a cheap ass, I would have been more comfortable with 15, but 20, I'm all right with. I'm all right with paying 20 out for this game.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Even me being a cheap ass, I'm okay with that.
All right. Sounds good.
So,
that is it for this episode. Thanks to everyone who came on, did their thing. This is the first part I'm recording, so I don't even know who the hell came on at this point.
Breaking
the fourth wall.
Did Cole come on yet?
It's probably going to be her, Chris Purnell, and then possibly Tim right before you. And then you are closing out the show.
Hi, Chris, Purnell, Cole, and maybe Tim. Fuck you, Joe. Fuck you.
Here, how about this? Why don't you just give us some final words? Give us your thoughts about the show on this, its 7th anniversary.
Well, let's see how your idea goes, and then if it doesn't go well, we can always record.
This is my idea. We're recording my idea right now. Give us your thoughts.
Wait, we're recording right now?
Yes.
Right now?
Yes.
Huh. So picture kind of like it.
I love these final words.
You know what? Shut up. I don't know. I'm just picturing like that Spaceballs, like, you know, like right now? Well, no, that's in the past, but right now, like.
Anyway. What's this part? It's now. Huh?
Yeah. All right. So what do you want me to talk about?
Oh, give us your thoughts on the show on its 7th anniversary. It's been 7 years of this. What are your thoughts on it? You've been around since near the beginning.
Yeah, so. I show up on like the 5th or 6th podcast, somewhere around there. Honestly, it's crazy that it's lasted this long. I don't think any of us ever expected it. And I don't know. I mean, it's been a crazy ride. Like, I mean, like, it originally just started with a bunch of us, like, sitting around over at the game store, shooting the shit about, like, whatever, you know, whatever video game news was out. And then we'd watch Bogue try to fail at a video game. Yeah, I kind of feel like we should bring something like that back, but, like, we would need, like, we'd have to record, like, a Twitch stream or some shit like that. I don't know how that would work, but, you know.
That's why I wish you didn't live so far away. We would be able to just do all these videos together, and it would be amazing.
No, because then I'd sneeze the whole time, because then, you know, I'd be around all your cats.
Bitch.
I'd be like, guys, I'm trying to play this. Game. I have to blow my nose again. I'm just saying.
That's a really good way to end the show.
I'm not. Hey, all right. I'm still fucking talking. All right. But I mean, it's crazy. I mean, like, think of like what we're offering now. I mean, it's like, you know, you like, we review. I mean, yeah, we still do the news, obviously. But like, you know, now you're recording like actual interviews with like people who make games. Like, I mean, did you think that was gonna happen?
When I started, no, I never saw, I mean, I thought I might have a chance at like some composer friends coming on, but I never thought that I would get like actual developers on talking about their games, you know, PR people talking about their experiences in the industry, people who've worked at multiple companies talking about just stories of working in older studios that don't exist anymore. Hell, right. we've talked to studios that don't exist anymore.
Fair enough. And it's just like, you've become this like weird, like almost like history of, you know, indie games, because like, as you said, like, you know, you've got recordings from these studios that they just don't exist. Like, and you know, and we just keep like, it just keeps growing and growing. I mean, like, you know, I mean, what was like the first like batch of video games that you would review? It was like, it was probably crap that you had, right?
No.
Oh, we just started getting shit for free. Oh, well, you know what?
No, I don't remember what the catalyst was. I think it was just watching Shiz Black. He got a game and I was like, how did you get that game? Because it was before it came out. And he's like, oh, I emailed the publisher and I was like, hey, I'm a streamer. I do this. And you know, they sent me a copy of the game. I was like, I wonder if I could fucking review shit like that on SML. Because before that, we had previously, like, covered a game or two here or there. Mm-hmm. Like, if the developer had come on, because we had done a handful of interviews at that time. Funk of Titans was an early one that we covered that the studio doesn't exist anymore.
What game is it?
Funk of Titans.
I don't even remember that title.
Yeah.
That's probably why.
They went on to do Blues and Bullets episodes 1 and 2 out of 5, and then the studio closed.
That's right, because you had told me, like, you had recommended that game on Steam, and then I was like, oh, maybe I'll pick it up, and you were like, don't. They never finished it because they're dead.
Yeah.
Like, oh. Well, dang it.
Yeah, it was a bummer. It's a bummer to go through and see some of the episodes we've covered of studios that aren't around or games that didn't pan out. It's just weird seeing the show as it's evolved from the beginning.
And also, I mean, like, think of like the games that like, you know, like what we're up to now. I mean, like, hell, like what, four years ago, I was reviewing, you know, iPhone games, and like that's pretty much all I was getting. And now I just reviewed Dragon Ball Z Kakarot. Like, we're moving
that
up.
That was more a case of you begging.
Shut up. All right. We still got it, though. We still got it. Like, Bandai Namco sends a shit on the regular. You know, how awesome is that? I mean, like, hell, I mean, we reviewed Control.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
we cover a lot from 505. We're lucky to be able to cover most of the games that we do. I mean, there are so many of these games that we cover on the show, I feel outclass our show.
Yeah, and dude, we started receiving Microsoft Studios stuff.
Well, we got one. Let's not get crazy on that train yet.
Hey, you know, we'll take that victory, you know?
Yes, it's a personal victory to me, but we'll see. But
I mean, you know, it's just like, think of that. I mean, and how, like, what are we going to be reviewing, like, you know, 4 years from now? I mean, hell. Maybe at that point,
man, I could be dead by then. God willing, I'm gone by then.
God willing, we're not doing this podcast in 4 years.
Jesus Christ, I don't want to be doing this shit in another 4 years.
You know, we'll be ready for like the 10th anniversary Palooza. We're just like, it's just 2 hours of everyone being like, why the fuck are you still listening to us?
What is wrong with you? Why Zach Lyons, what is wrong with you?
Why can't you find a quality podcast already? My God. It's been 10 years. Haven't you found something else better?
Oh, my Lord. On that note, yeah, we are going to wrap up the show. Going to play some music from the 1UPS. They've been one of the most consistent bands that we've played on the show over the years. So we're going to end the show with some 1UPS. And Jacob, do you have any final words?
Well, folks, it's been a pleasure doing this, and I'm glad I've been a part of it for pretty much almost the entire run so far. And I look forward to, you know, entertaining you, making you regret that you're listening to this podcast, and getting free games on the reg. So thank you for listening, and I hope that you continue to.